The episode you're about to listen to is a special edition of The Startup Show, recorded during Grit Daily's live event at South by Southwest. Here we have an expansive range of topics and featured experts from various industries. Enjoy.
Hello, we are here today with Devin Johnson. I am Emily Reynolds-Berg, the founder of R Public Relations, here interviewing Devin today, who is our fabulous CEO of Brand Defenders, which is based outside of Salt Lake City. And Devin and his team actually work with various brands around the country, working on reputation management, something that we can all benefit from learning about and utilizing. And he's here today to speak to us about his work. Hi, Devin.
Hi, Emily. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. Brand Defenders. I love the name. It kind of seems like an obvious name for what you do, but tell us about your origin story and about Brand Defenders so people can know about your work.
Yeah. Thanks for teeing that up. So one of the things that brought me into the industry of rep management was really starting my career long ago. I mean, it feels like yesterday, Emily, when you kind of just continue through building businesses and you just live in kind of the current state of excitement and entrepreneurialism. But when I look back historically at the companies that we've built and the opportunity that I've had to work with such great people over the years and really to be a part of a lot of fun brands, it afforded me the option of kind of moving on in 2017 from a tech company that we had built and that's still in existence and has served millions of customers around the world. And so in 2017, I was approached by an organization that wanted to kind of get into rep management. They were looking at an organization to buy, and they needed to assemble a team. So essentially, we just kind of got right under the hood of this organization, looking at process, looking at repeatability. How do you kind of scale a business? Really looking at it, Emily, from the standpoint of a buyer, really with the lens of a VC to say, how do we maximize our return? And that gave me a different perspective. And it wasn't until that deal fell apart because the originating buyer didn't have the capital that they kind of presented that they would have. And for one reason or another, the deal fell apart. And so after that took place, I was approached by the seller of the business, having already kind of taken a liking to some of the strategies that I'd put forth and how we would reshape that business and grow it. And he wanted to then stay on and be a part of it. And he and I together did a partnership to kind of do what we had planned and just make it a little bit smaller cap table. And so that meant back in about 2018, we moved operations from the East Coast out into the West, where I'm outside Salt Lake, and started assembling a team. And part of that was looking at kind of the nuts and bolts again of the business, what the market was. But for me, Emily, everything goes back to why I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned early in my career was, Devin, you're chasing the financial side of all of these opportunities, mm-hmm. right? And most of us, as we get into building our own business, we try to pick up a job in a vertical that we're really interested in. A lot of times it's because of the monetary gain, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily the emotional benefit. And so as I started thinking, okay, what's my next venture going to be? It had to be rewarding and flexible for me and for my family life and for the goals that I had. And so part of that is really thinking ahead of what these goals are, mm-hmm. to what success looks like in the back end, mm-hmm. and trying to build a company around that would be more of a life-work balance and a work-life balance.
Right.
So now let's fast forward to Brand Defenders. And Brand Defenders took shape because as we started to do that personally, as we started to create a culture for our team that was very rewarding, that really created a culture of accountable autonomy where they have flexibility for life, mm-hmm. Being complementary with their work. The customer and the company didn't suffer because of that autonomy. Mm-hmm. What we found was they started finding their own personal satisfaction in what they were doing. Mm-hmm. When we basically said there's no glass ceiling to your role and what drives you to grow in your role, they found more personal satisfaction. And so as you continue forward and you start thinking laterally and vertically within the mindset of your staff,
right?
As a leader, it was important for me to care about our staff, mm-hmm. equally or greater than I care about my customer. And that's important.
Yeah.
Right? So what that means is now when you start thinking through a process, originally when we kind of took over the business, it was very rep management focused.
Right.
And if you know rep management, Emily, like I know you do, it tends to be a lot of crisis cleanup. And, you know, from the buyer standpoint or really the scalability standpoint, that is not very repeatable. It's not scalable. I can't predict when the next lawsuit's going to occur and taint somebody's search results.
Right.
On the other hand, when we can offer more concierge style service, something that fundamentally defends their online brand asset, which is their brand's name, mm-hmm. We now have a little bit more of a sticky offering that provides more meaning. But it's all rooted back into that why of why their organization exists and how we can better amplify that message. So a really long answer to a question that you probably didn't think you were going to get that in-depth of an answer on. But there you go. Hopefully it made sense.
I really appreciate some of the highlights from what you just said. Is your team is your main focus? And I think I wasn't expecting that answer, honestly. A lot of times when you ask people about their business, they're thinking of their clients and who they serve. So the fact that your team focus really speaks to you as a leader. And then, you know, dipping into the services you offer. I mean, if you have your team that's passionate and strong at what they're doing, I can only imagine the concierge type of service that you're offering for people when they're probably at their lowest, when they're looking to seek your service, to be able to kind of have the strong team collaboration and such is super important. And
that's the goal, right? Is for most organizations, we tend to be very narrow focused on who our customer is and who's going to keep fuel in the tank.
Right.
But ultimately, it's a lot cheaper to keep fuel in the tank with customers that are happy, that are referring your brand, that are promoters of your brand, than it is to just continue to find new ones to replace them. And, you know, I worked with a billion-dollar makeup company years ago, and when I first walked in and the CXO originally brought me in, the CMO walked in, and I asked, what is your annual churn on your customers? And they also sell through a wholesale network, and I said, what about your distributors, your wholesalers? Mm-hmm. And they said, we have about an 86% or an 88%, annual churn on our customers. And I thought, 88%. You guys are doing over $1 billion in annualized revenue. And if you were to just, for number's sake, say $880 million of that revenue is going to walk out your door every single year because of customer churn, that's not a fire. And he said, well, look, there's 8-point-something billion women in the world, or he spouted off some number. Forgive me if it's the wrong data point. But I thought, what a scorched earth, ignorant mentality to have as a leader. And I thought, if that's what you're telling me is corporate advisor for your brand, I can only imagine what you're telling your subordinates and staff and how that trickles out to your distributors, to your customers, to your wholesalers.
Right.
They feel it. And when you think about closing the gap on that customer retention alone, let alone just picking up new markets, I thought, man, we really need to go back to the drawing board on why you're in business and why someone should want to work with you, because the purpose and passion of that business is fundamental on whether we take them on as a client.
Right.
There's far too many people that need rep management that don't deserve rep management. Right.
Interesting.
And I speak of rep management from the standpoint of cleaning up negativity, not the proactive side of rep management.
So. Yeah. In the PR world, which is where I come from, which is your partner in rep management, for sure, like one of my like golden standards is if you're doing something dirty, illegal, harming another person, I'm not going to help you with your brand outreach and media relations. Like if it's just, So right. If you have that note inside of you, you know, not everybody may be a fit or a candidate. Yeah. That being said, what is your ideal client? Like that's one of the examples of maybe not an ideal client, but what would be an ideal client?
You know, and that's the beauty of the way that you asked that question, that the ideal client is someone that has ethical discernment, that has a moral compass. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great brands that are going to have negativity. And so you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater saying, hey, you got yourself in a civil lawsuit or a class action lawsuit, or you have an arrest on your record. And, you know, as the CFO of this company, you don't warrant us trying to help the company who you're also now causing damage to by way of name association. There's a lot of variables where we have to use discretion and discernment in our business to select who we want to work with.
Right.
So when you look at verticals, there's obviously a lot of different industries that consequently, based on how they operate, are notorious for garnering negativity.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of clients in the debt consolidation industry. Debt consolidation is one of those inevitables, right? There's a reason that bankruptcy law is a practice and a legalized event and activity. It's not because it should be a be-all, fix-all for bad fiscal responsibility, but sometimes you get in a situation where that might be your last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, when you think of debt consolidation organizations, they suffer from people complaining about the fact that it's not a fun process. And honestly, it shouldn't be. Right? It should actually teach you a couple things along the way and make it painful to go through so that you don't become a repeat customer.
Right.
On the other hand, you have people in organizations like vehicle protection plans. It became an actual family joke where even at the time, my two-year-old used to walk up and say, hey, Dad, I'm contacting you about your car's extended warranty. And because she would hear her older brothers or sister make that joke. Well, we have clients that are vehicle protection plan organizations.
Interesting.
And I tell you, Emily, I had one vehicle that was a wonderful vehicle, like most German vehicles are, until they break.
Right.
And mine had just run out of warranty. It's almost like they built it into the software.
Right.
And when it broke, and I ended up taking it into the shop, I thought, I sure hope that the additional $2,000 I paid for this vehicle protection plan through some organization that, you know, I'd never heard of, really helps me. It was something the dealership sold me.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, I came in, they fixed the problem. I thought, cool. That was like an $800-$900 fix.
Yeah.
I'm at least kind of 40% recovered into my investment on this warranty. And I far outweighed the investment on that by the time I got rid of that vehicle. And so I'm one of those guys that actually is a promoter of that vertical. But then again, I know that there's a lot of organizations that shouldn't be in business. They don't pay out claims, right? And so they don't take care of their customers. So back to your original question, how do we identify or who is a prime audience or customer for us? It's someone that really is building their business on value and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They have missions and values that actually mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean like on a wall in a conference room. I mean that the team understands them and buys into.
Mm-hmm.
Because the worst thing as a rep management company, unless you're one of those rep management companies that doesn't have their own morals and ethics, is that the companies that are just out there getting the complaints more often than not are going to be great job security if that's the type of customer you want to represent. I am more focused on brand development in our organization than I am rep management or what people would consider cleanup or building insulation around potential negatives that would need cleaning.
Right.
So for me, while we'll take on clients that have that, it's important to find ones that you really want to champion and get behind. Think of it this way, and I'll leave you with a simile. Think of yourself, if you're a brand defender, everybody on our staff is trained as though they're a partner in that organization. Mm-hmm. That we're brought in as an investor, as a shareholder, as a board member, as a new CMO or somebody of influence within the brand. If we come into that boardroom and we're talking with other executives or decision makers, we're not just going to keep our head in the sand and go right to writing content. Never have I ever heard of a new executive joining a team and not asking, who's your client? Mm-hmm. Why do we do this? Is this what we really want to do long term? Is this helping us achieve our goals? And another host of questions. And so for us, that's part of our onboarding.
Right.
When we onboard a customer, we do it the same way, because the answers to those questions are what really guides and directs our next steps.
So fascinating. So it's not just a, okay, I need you to bury this article kind of thing, which some people may think of reputation management being. Yeah. Get rid of this online.
Yeah.
You're looking at it from a deeper approach. So that way you're kind of, I'm putting words, but being more proactive so that it's a long-term solution. So that way, like, you're doing a bit more business consulting in that way. Is that?
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head, Emily. So originally when I came into the organization, much like many other rep management companies, many of one which are even based here in Austin, the standard operating procedure for rep management has just been identify the negative and try to reverse engineer it through what's called reverse SEO and bury it.
Right.
It's called suppression.
Suppression.
Most don't have the relationships, the clout, or the legal backbone to get it removed from the web. In many cases, we can. In other cases, we have to negotiate through Google to get no follow tags or de-indexing put on certain articles. But those are holy grails, right? So if somebody comes in, we don't promise the world and say, oh, we can get everything deleted. Because I hate having a customer come in saying, hey, I worked with this other rep management company that was quoting me and says they can get this SEC.gov article off of the homepage by deleting it. I'm never going to bid on that deal because you're setting me up to fail.
Yeah.
Right? I have to bear the hard truth that no one under the sun is going to get the federal government to remove something from their websites. They don't engage in that legalized extortion game that some site owners engage in. And so feel free to kind of go down that road if that's really what you want from my brand, but I'm not going to misarticulate what we offer just to earn your money.
Yeah.
It'll set us up to fail, and my personal reputation and our brand's reputation means more to me. So for us, we had to evolve our business. And in a way, Emily, that's actually caused us to have a little bit greater internal labor cost because there's a whole lot more data intelligence mining and really identifying customer segments and building strategy rooted in intelligence before we ever just throw things up and execute. And so no, hopefully a lot of the other organizations are advancing their practices as well, but gone should be the days of just throwing up garbage content, hoping to bury something negative.
Yeah. I think the general, just like any of our industries, there's like general awareness, and the general awareness for reputation management, in my experience, is bury this, you know, more of an urgency. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're highlighting for our audience today is really the layers to it, you know, starting with building your team and making sure that your customers are well taken care of because people that work with you are excited to be there and passionate about growing their own professions. And then adding these elements to who you serve to make sure it's not just a, here's this quick fix. Like this is, you know, looking at all of the key components of what makes that organization run and or not run and or the functionality of it, and then helping them put together like the proper channels to do so. So that's just like way more layers to me, even, and somebody who works somewhat in your industry from time to time. You're highlighting those things. So let's
put this into a plan or into a kind of a step-by-step process. So if someone is dealing with negativity online, and let's say that it is a negative article or it could be a negative review, user-generated content with reviews and forum sites is a little different animal because there can be more damage than benefit to creating a response.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certain platforms, if you think the BBB, Glassdoor, others, they want engagement, right? If you're an engaged employer or you're an engaged organization, you get rewarded.
Right?
So you can actually file a request for complaints to be deleted over time on some of those sites. And so there is a good practice to kind of get yourselves trained on how to best respond with empathy, being authentic and genuine to what that person felt versus being combative. But if you have written articles, and this is where you tend, especially from the PR side, to get pulled into rep management. It's, Emily, please tell my story a better way than they did to try to reshape the search results. One of the best ways that you can do that, and that listeners can do that on their own is to think of their content writing in different ways. So if you're going to create an article, what is the goal of that article? What is the market? What's the audience? What product are you talking about?
Yeah.
If we think about a car manufacturer and they're going to publish an article on a new vehicle, Emily, what's your favorite type of car?
Oh, geez. Right now I'm driving an Infiniti and I love it.
Okay. But what model of an Infiniti is it?
QX80, I think.
Okay. A QX80 is a full-size three-row SUV with a V8, last I checked.
Wow.
Okay. So the reason that I bring that up is that if Infiniti is going to go write an article on that vehicle, they're going to talk about the spacious and umptuous interior of this.
Cozy.
Yeah. I mean, full-size third row, can seat three adults. They're going to talk about the ambiance and the horsepower and how much it can tow and all these great things. They're pinpointing an audience that is not your single 20 to 30-year-old audience.
Right.
They're probably family members. If they weren't at a specific point in their career, they probably would have bought the Armada, not the Infiniti, their Nissan version versus the luxury version. Right. And so as you start drilling down into these market segments, you can start to pinpoint who you're writing content about. Mm-hmm. But if you're a listener and you're dealing with negativity and you're thinking, hey, Devin, I get it. I got to talk about my product in such a way or my service offering that highlights the benefits. The points you want to include in that content writing are keywords or attributes within the negative content that are sometimes really hard to digest.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone talks about your location, it talks about your restaurant, it talks about your food in such a way that is quite damaging and embarrassing in some ways, because as entrepreneurs, business owners, we're passionate about what we do. If I'm writing for Infiniti and Infiniti is getting harassed because the new Sequoia is a better full-size rig, and it may or may not be, for all the QX80 fans out there, don't write me saying that it's not. But the point there is, sometimes you have to incorporate some of that negativity in your content writing.
Right.
Google is an AI bot. You have to think of it as a new customer. We often think about our customers as a family that is of a certain wealth, a certain number of kids to market the QX80 to. My point is, my team would not only understand that's your customer, but Google's AI bot is also a customer, and what they think of that vehicle obviously shows that negative article as being one of those attributes that it indexed.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to recalibrate that indexing. You have to retrain and speak to the AI system the same way you do a mother who wants to keep her kids safe while looking elegant and having a Stanley mug sitting in the center console, right? You have to be that intentional with Google's AI system if you want to truly insulate and suppress that content long-term. So it is hitting two birds with one stone. It is retraining the algorithm to bury something. But back to your original point, it's doing it with intention so that long-term, we're not coming around with someone's budget 3 months later, still saying, hey, we're putting this into bloated crap content to try to get this negative thing off of the SERP. Instead, we're saying, how do we amplify the amazing vehicles, the amazing cars, or the amazing trucks that you deliver such a way that we quiet the noise, we put out the fire while elevating the brand.
I love that. And totally get that the layers to all of the things that you do at Brand Defenders. And so many more questions I could ask you, Devin. You are just a dynamic, very interesting, completely versed in what you do, CEO. And it's just been so amazing to have you. I have so many questions. What is something that we can wrap up to our listeners today? Like what's the bow that we want to put together? And
yeah, that's really nice of you, Emily. I appreciate the compliments. And likewise, I admire you and admire the talents that you have and what you do for your market and your customers. When I think about what to leave with someone, and this is really for me, Emily, what I'm rooted in. And it was a point of awareness for me in about probably 2019. There's been points as a father, points in my life as an entrepreneur, where the pendulum has swung the other way, allowing me to reflect on wins, losses, successes, failures, both personally, financially, professionally. And when you're in those moments and you start thinking about where you want to go, right? A lot of people here have kind of seen and heard that I joke saying I'm an aspiring rancher. You know, I grew up with my hands in the dirt. I was a farm boy. I was an Eagle Scout. For me, that's grounding. It takes me back to who I am. For me, I still operate of the mindset where a handshake means something to someone. Mm-hmm. And so everything that I do now, whether it's working with organizations to help them think the same way or just to keep it as my compass, comes back to being quite intentional with my time and with being authentic with who I am. And sometimes what listeners may need to think about is that is being honest with who you're not.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we think about us being an expert or a thought leader in these different arenas, and we may not be, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it refines who our target market is, mm-hmm. or why that market may want to come and learn from us versus someone else. And so always keeping myself in a state of learning, surrounding myself by people that can continually educate me is important.
Mm-hmm.
And it guides me as a father. I know we talked before the show about the fact that I have 4 kids. That defines me. It gives me passion and purpose, Emily.
I love that.
And I have children ranging from, I guess it's not even a child now, he'll be 18 in May, so soon an adult. And I've got children that'll be 18, 15, 12, and 5.
Wow.
2 boys, 2 girls, and a wonderful wife that helps me keep track of it.
Great.
And
love that.
That's important for entrepreneurs, for people that are leading businesses or wanting to grow businesses or just simply out there trying to do their best. It's important to realize where you've come from and those parties that are really a part of it. And my first 3 children were part of a different marriage, and they've got their wonderful mom at home that is supportive of them and helping them become wonderful humans when they're not with my wife and I. And my wife and daughter are just, you know, just the light that when I get home, and my other children, that it really drives the purpose of why I just did what I did. And so I would leave with, find whatever your compass is that's authentic and genuine, and then translate that into your corporate life to make sure that what you're doing professionally echoes the character and the moral kind of passion that you have at home, so that they complement each other.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry we've got to end right now, but more to come. And you can find Devin at Brand Defenders. He's the CEO and a wealth of knowledge. So go check him out. And I am Emily Reynolds-Berg of R Public Relations, your host today. And so happy to have you, and look forward to more conversations. We definitely have a lot of synergy.
Thanks, Emily.